Blog Talk Radio.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? I think so. But we have an exciting show planned for you today, so stay tuned. Teresa Harper and Hannah Eicher, the two sisters of Carla Jepsen. This is when a mom's caregiver suddenly needs a caregiver herself. Teresa and Hannah, the two sisters of Carla Jepsen, tell her story. You do not want to miss this interview, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, as I said, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are very caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. You know anybody like that? Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency and the mask falls out of the ceiling, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put, you know, your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Just what we need, another thing, huh? Well, unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. You got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts, my books, my videos, my blogs. I know, it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout, and if you are, where you are in the process. And just for doing that, I'm going to email you my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. Story about me and my wife and her debilitating stroke that she had at the young age of 52. And she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. Now, I would like to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, sales rep, author, stand-up comic, and caregiver to her mom, Bonnie Romero. She discussed her story and how she survived burnout. Great. You don't want to miss that. I want to remind everybody all these are recorded podcasts. Boy, say that fast three times. including the one we're doing today. So you can hear it any time of the day or night, 24/7, after it goes live. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guests now, because I have more than one. Hold on while I click all these buttons here. Sometimes it takes a second or two. There, welcome to the show, Teresa and Hannah. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Thank you for having us, Dave.
Yes, thank you.
Good, you're both there. That's good news. I don't have to go looking for you. Girls, thanks again for allowing me to interview you today, and I just want you to know I really appreciate it. Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourselves? Just who was, is Teresa, Hannah, and Carla before you kind of all became caregivers, right?
Well, we are three sisters. I am the oldest. Carla is 4 years younger than I am, and Teresa is 13 years younger than I am.
Wow.
We were born in Czechoslovakia while it was still communist, and our parents and us escaped in 1979. Came to California, didn't speak any English, settled, prospered, and, you know, became moms and successful businesswomen. And life went along very merrily for many, many years. We were very fortunate. We all stayed in Southern California, and we were a very close-knit family, of course, with its ups and downs and differences. But, you know, I think because of the emigration experience, more close-knit than others.
Sure.
Our dad started to get ill about 8 years ago. Mom was taking care of him, and dad was a big guy, 6'5". Mm. Mom is about 5'3". So at the end, you know, when he had a hard time walking and was falling down a lot, and of course, you know, being the traditional European man, expected mom to be the primary caregiver, mom really hurt herself and hurt her lower back and needed spine surgery. And she came to stay with me and Carla. Carla and I lived together with our kids in Woodland Hills in a big house. So after the spine surgery, she came to recover with the expectation that once she is back on her feet and able to be independent again, she'll go back to Huntington Beach and live in her own house. And while this was going on, about a year into it, our middle sister, Carla, who was 46 years old at the time and had high blood pressure, but, you know, another tall person, she's 5'11", she was very thin, her high blood pressure was under control, just out of nowhere, you know, came home from work, unloaded groceries, dropped my daughter off, and collapsed in the kitchen. And, you know, was rushed to the head trauma center in San Fernando Valley, which is Northridge Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got there, she was intubated and being prepared to be flown in a helicopter to Cedars-Sinai because Northridge could not handle it. It was so complicated. So everyone was, of course, very kind, very supportive. They asked me to sign do not resuscitate papers because they really didn't think Carla was going to make it. So, you know, completely distraught, I drove home. Teresa, in the meantime, made it up here from Orange County. We collected all the kids, got into my car and rushed to Cedars-Sinai. And initially we were told that they cannot operate on her because so much was going on. It turned out that Carla had a subdural hematoma, which is a big bruise that bleeds on your brain, and also an aneurysm that bled in the back of her skull. Then the vascular neurosurgeon got there, and he said, oh, no, you know, we must operate immediately or she really will die. And he did the surgery. He opened her skull. He removed all the blood from the subdural hematoma. And then through a main artery in her thigh, he tied off the aneurysm, stopped all the bleeding from the aneurysm. And then about 2 days later, we learned that Carla also suffered a series of small strokes And then Carla could not speak for about 6 weeks. So we knew she was paralyzed on her left side from the strokes, but we couldn't tell what kind of cognitive impairment she had because she couldn't tell us. When she finally did start to speak again, we realized that her long-term memory is completely intact. Like, she knows all the words to all the songs. She knows everything about her childhood. She recognizes everyone she knew, but she has no recollection of, you know, anything that happened in the last 2-5 minutes today. She can't tell you what she had for breakfast, who came to visit her. She's constantly worried about where are the kids, you know, where is Jake, her son, where is Sarah. She doesn't remember taking her medications. She's very confused and can get anxious very easily. So, you know, she is. She spent about 6 months in different hospitals, getting physical therapy and trying to get stronger and recover from all of this. And when she came home, Dave, she was convinced that she was abducted by aliens because she didn't remember us visiting her, and she didn't remember us telling her what happened to her. She couldn't retain the information. So the way her brain helped her process it is she was abducted by very kind aliens who were all trying to really help her get better. But, you know, that was the only way she could make sense of it. And it took us a good 6 weeks to really explain to her that, no, there were no aliens. She did not come home in a spaceship, that she had a stroke, and, you know, that all of this has happened to her. And so now she can tell you, I had a stroke, but she really doesn't understand the long-term implications of what it means. And she is permanently disabled. She will not be able to work again. Do you want to add anything, Teresa, that I forgot?
Before you do, I'd like to ask a question about the memory. Does she really retain everything that's happened before the stroke, and it's everything after the stroke is kind of sketchy? But apparently she's retained the information that you told her about what's happened. You know, she had a stroke and this and that. So how far back does her memory have to go before, you know, I'm talking about the memory after the stroke. How far back can she really retain things? And I know you said, you know, 5-10 minutes, but, I mean, does she remember what happened yesterday, for example?
No.
Does she remember what happened last month?
No, she doesn't remember what happened 5 minutes ago.
You can literally walk in the room and say hello and then walk out and wait a few minutes and come back in, and she thinks you just got there, at least for me, because I don't live with them.
No, the same with me.
That's like that movie.
She has no retention.
That's like that movie, 50 First Dates. They call them 10 Second Tom. Hi, my name is Tom. And then 10 seconds later, he goes, hi, my name is Tom. Wow.
Right.
So there really are people out there like that.
Yes.
Yes.
And any prognosis that's positive that will ever improve with therapy?
No, they really cannot tell us anything. They don't know, but it's been over a year and a half, and there is no improvement. So,
Well, let me give you some encouragement. My mother had dementia. I put her in a very, very nice facility, and we met a world famous artist, which I interviewed on the show, and she had a stroke also, and for 1 year she had lost her memory. And she didn't know who she was, and everyone around her was strangers. And then all of a sudden, after a year, it was a miracle. Her memory came back. And so, you know, you just never know. You never know. So never give up hope to anybody out there.
We are hopeful.
You know, the doctors are just practicing physicians. They're not the great physician.
Right.
So now, Teresa, was there anything you want to add to that?
No.
She did a very good job, didn't she?
She did a very good job.
I'm impressed.
The only thing that initially threw us off, because she didn't speak for so long, and when she slowly was coming to in the hospital, I mean, after 6 weeks of not hearing her voice, and for a long time she just had her eyes open, but it didn't even seem like she knew who you were when you were in front of her. But when she did finally start to talk, she initially thought that she had had a baby, because why else would she be in the hospital? And then she was confused about why she had a boot on. They put a boot on her left leg when, because of her paralysis, you don't want to get drop foot. So she kept telling me that we were going skiing and how come I didn't have my boots on. So through all of the initial trauma and just trying to process everything that was going on, there were a few moments now looking back that we can actually smile about because, you know, you just chuckled yourself. It's kind of funny that we had to convince her, no, we're not going skiing, and no, you don't have a baby. But she's come a long way since then.
We have so much to talk about. I don't know where to start, but let's just try to take this piece by piece here. What is the impact on the whole family? Because you're a very close-knit family. I know you lost your father. What did he die of, by the way?
He died about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it?
The heart failure. Heart failure.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So how has this impacted the whole family, of what's left of the family, the four of you, of, you know, seeing your mom be a caregiver, hurt her spine, and your dad leaving, and now your sister Carla needing care when she was, you know, the caregiver?
Well, I guess let's take it from the top. So mom, and I think, is the biggest surprise in all of this, because mom was always so strong and so positive and really took care of all of us, you know, not just us as children, but then all of our children. And after she lost her independence and her health, and then, of course, especially after Carla collapsed, mom just completely gave up. So she sunk into such deep depression because, you know, she lost her husband. We had to sell her house because we realized she cannot live independently. She lost her independence. She lost the ability to take care of everyone. And I think really what makes her feel so very depressed is that she feels like she is a burden because she cannot contribute the way she used to. And, you know, she watches us running around taking care of the kids and Carla and juggling a full-time jobs and, you know, all the insanity of normal life. And all she can do is lie there. On top of it, she broke her hip and she's now waiting for hip replacement surgery. So she's now in diapers, and it's just very difficult for her. So mom is it's very hard on mom. Mom is very depressed, and you know, I almost want to say she lost her will to live. And no matter what we say or do or who we take her to see, we cannot get it back, right? Then Teresa and I, it's, you know, how you talk about having two kids in diapers. So imagine two adults in diapers. And Teresa, because she's in Huntington Beach and I'm in Woodland Hills, which is, you know, with traffic in L.A., good 45, 50 minutes away. And Teresa has a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. So it's really hard for us to get together on a frequent basis. So, you know, we do a lot of stuff over the phone, and but it's still it's difficult, right, for the two of us to get together with mom and Carla. And then our kids. So let me start with mine, and then I'll have Teresa tell you about hers. So my mom took care of my daughter since she was born until she was 6 years old, and my dad got sick, and then mom started to take care of dad. And my nephew, because Carla and I lived 5 minutes apart, it was always a big part of all of that growing up along with his nanny. So the kids were used to having mom as a very active grandmother who was always there for them, very loving, very involved, and certainly a part of their daily life. And so now to see, you know, this person who is so uninvolved and checked out and not even speaking, it's very, very difficult. And on top of that, for Jake to really lose his mom, and for Sarah to lose her aunt, who was also like her second mom because we lived together, and the kids go to the same school where Carla used to be the purchasing director. So she would drive them to school, bring them home from school. You know, she was always there for them. It was such a huge shift from their daily routine. And then our house literally overnight became a skilled nursing facility. So I have two sick people in my living room because neither mom or Carla can go upstairs. And I have a two-story house. All the bedrooms are upstairs. So we, you know, remodeled the downstairs bathroom into an ADA-compliant bathroom, but the bottom line is they are in the living room. So the kids are teenagers. They are both 16. Jake is almost 17. So they just want to be normal teenagers, and there are times when they resent it. They resent having two sick people at home and the fact that I don't have the time that I used to have for them. And, you know, everything takes priority around these two sick people. And, of course, because they are totally self-involved, normal teenagers, they want it to be all about them. And so Teresa and I probably just sat them down 2 weeks ago and we said, look, you know, this is our family and this is how we do it in our family. And these are two women who took care of you since you were born. And this is what we have to do for them because this is what we do in this family. And you will realize it once you get a little older that this is really not only the right thing to do, but the only thing to do. And, you know, it breaks my heart because they are so sad about it. And, you know, we all, of course, grieve for them, but they are still there. They are still there. It's just they are not who they used to be. So it's very difficult from that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a teenager living with me. I know the pain. So did
and
the talk help?
They are very good kids.
Did the talk help their attitude a little bit?
Yes, you know, they are, I don't want to say that they have an attitude. I think that, you know, they struggle with it at times because so much is expected of them, you know, that normal kids don't have to deal with.
So they're the caregivers as well. You're all taking turns.
Correct. And then Teresa will tell you about her little ones.
The only thing also that I would like to add, how my mom is processing everything or how our mom is processing it, that is something that I get questioned a lot. You know, do you think it's better to lose someone quickly, you know, if they're hit by a bus and they're gone and you didn't get to say goodbyes, or is it better to be able to lose someone slowly, like for us right now, or a cancer patient? And I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you, just hearing what Hannah said and how it impacts the entire, not only just our family, our children, but my husband, our friends. I mean, people who you really find out who you are and who your true friends are when you go through something like this, because it's a taboo subject. And, you know, you're in pain, you're hurting, and people always say, oh, my God, you guys are so strong. How are you doing it? And you have to. You have to keep doing the best you can, and some days are going to be great, and some days are going to kick you in the butt, but you just have to keep moving. But watching my mom give up is, I think, the hardest thing for all of us right now currently to see. And luckily, Carla is unaware of it because she was always very close to my mom as well. And Carla, I think, out of all of us, was the most emotional of all of us. But that is something very, very difficult to go through. And my daughters are 6 and 4. And my 6-year-old asked me a couple of months ago, you know, Mommy, what are you going to look like when you're old? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, what are you going to look like when you're old? And here me being, you know, super mom, I'm like, oh, good, this is a teaching moment. I'm going to tell her, well, you know, that's why I eat good food and I exercise and we got to get plenty of sleep. And, you know, I'm going to be looking great. And I even threw you under the bus, Hannah. I said, you know, that the Hannah is 13 years older than me and she looks pretty good. But she's like, no. She's like, what are you going to look like when you are a Bobby? So Bobby is short for Babichka, which is grandma in Czech. And she's like, I don't want you to ever look like Bobby. And that crushed my heart because, like Hannah said, for her, who has always been so close to my mom, and we actually named her after my mom, they're both named Stana, that was really, really difficult to hear. So that's one part that I think people should know, that it doesn't just impact you, it impacts everybody around you. And in terms of the kids, Jake and Sarah with Carla, they did, the talk was a little bit challenging at times, but I think all in all, it brought us closer together. The Czech Republic is different than the United States. It's similar to other collectivistic countries where, you know, family units are really close, and it's not uncommon to have, you know, grandma living with the parents and their kids in a house, or it's, you know, a two-story apartment building, and grandma and grandpa are in the apartment building above you, and you are in the apartment below. So we did explain that to them. We're not going to ship them into some facility where, God forbid, Carla starts seeing aliens again. This is how we take care of us. And I think that's another thing that sets us apart is I know so many people, because it's so hard. I mean, we're moving so fast. Technology, everything is so fast. Right. It's so hard to be able to sacrifice and work full-time, come home, take care of yourself, take care of your children, take care of, and then the people that you're being a caregiver for, that it's much easier to just, well, we'll put them in the facility, we'll pay top-notch, they'll be okay. And there's nothing wrong with that either. Not one family is the same, but that's not what we're not going to do that.
Wow. You know, we need to take a break. We've covered so much. We will be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Hannah and Tezra. Wow, what a story. And I was going to ask you what was the most difficult aspect, but you've already answered that. I don't think it gets any more difficult than that. And as far as I was going to ask you what's the most surprising aspect of it, I think you answered that as well, talking about how, you know, we take care of our own. This is the way we do it. You know, there's no other way, and this is how we would want to be treated. But, my goodness, what a touching, touching story. How do you cope with burnout, girls? How do you, because I know you've had burnout. I know every single family member, including the kids, have suffered burnout. How do you deal with that?
I'll answer first because I think yours is more than mine currently, honey, because of the fact that you live there. But before my mom moved in with them and I was taking care of her, it's very, very hard not to burn out, because I think it's also part of us. We're nicknamed the OVAs because our maiden name was Brezikova, and we're these strong Czech chicks. And I swear, if one more person tells me how strong I am, I think I might not receive it as well as I have in the past. But it's you really have to take it day by day. And the hardest thing for me that has helped me not suffer from burnout is accepting help and asking for help, because I was always such, well, I still am, a go-getter, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to trailblaze through it, and only I can do it the best possible way. And I've had to learn that no, that's not the only way, and yes, my husband has two hands, and he's wonderful, and can be just of a great caregiver to my children as I am. And yes, I can step back and let Hannah, you know, take my mom to the doctor or deal with insurance questions. And that's one thing that I think you need to do is accept help and know when you have to ask for help as well.
Absolutely.
And know that that's not a sign of weakness, because
excellent
for me,
advice.
It took a really, really, really long time. Go ahead,
yes.
Honey.
Caregivers definitely need to ask for help. And there's actually people out there offering the help. And you'd be surprised how many caregivers say, oh, no, I'm okay, you know. So go ahead, Hannah.
So I really try and keep it in perspective, because in a way there is really only so much I can do, right? So are they taken care of? Did they have all their meds? Did they eat? Are they dry? You know, are they comfortable? Are they out of pain, right? And if all of that is taken care of, then I cannot make them happier, or did you see what I mean? There has to be a stop point. And if I find myself getting short with them, then I know I'm really tired. You know, if Carla starts driving me crazy and I start snapping, then I know I am at that point where I really need to step back and, you know, go and read for a while and put my mind elsewhere, because that's not fair to her. You know, she's not doing anything wrong or on purpose. She's just hurt, you know. So I really try and watch my reactions, because that's a really good teller of where I am at in my mood, because as long as I can keep the good humor and can keep Carla laughing about her, whatever it is, you know, she texts without putting spaces between words, so she sounds like Jabba the Hutt, and either it will drive me crazy and I will scream at her, or I will make her laugh about it. So, you know, that's a good indicator. And then with mom, I absolutely cannot get angry with mom, because it will only sink her further in depression. So Teresa is absolutely right. You have to ask for help and let other people do it, and you know, kind of step back and get away. And I do try and get away for a few days every quarter or so and take some time to myself, and that's very helpful. And I do try and spend time with the kids away from all of this. And you know, I do have help from caregivers, so thank God I am able to do that. But it's still, it's very hard. Just this morning, Carla woke up at 6:30 in the morning throwing up. And, you know, that was the start to my day. So, changing the whole bed, changing Carla. You know, it's just, there are days when you really wonder if this is the sane way to do things.
So how long does it take when you go read or realize that you need a break before you're better or ready to come back?
Well, I am, you know, very lucky that I'm a pretty, I process everything through my head. I'm not processing everything through my heart. So my head is on pretty straight. And if I spend an hour by myself reading, I'm good to go. That's usually all I need. I mean, I know why I'm doing it, and I know I have choices, and this is the choice I made. And, you know, the thing that I really keep in the back of my mind, Dave, is I've always told the kids there are two kinds of people in this world, the ones who make excuses and the ones who show up. And I show up, and I have chosen to show up for my mom and my sister, their grandmother and their mom and their aunt. And I'm showing up, and I'm showing up every day, and that's what I'm teaching them, that it's not easy, that it's not pleasant, you know, that it makes you tired, that, yes, it is difficult. It's a big imposition on your time and privacy and blah, 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 but you do it because this is your family. These are the people who love you and that you love, and who else do you do it for? You know, what is a family for? So I don't complain, because what's the use whining, right? Nothing gets you. Whining gets you nothing. Mm-hmm.
So what about caregiver guilt? You guys familiar with that?
I have it all the time.
I don't have any. Honestly, I don't. That's what I just took you through. Are they dry? Are they fed? Did they have all their meds? You know, fine. They are fine. They're fine. I've done everything I can.
That's good. What about you, Teresa? You might be struggling with guilt a little more than your sister.
Definitely so. And part of it is, well, I'll just put it in 2 points. First, living 60 plus miles away, I do suffer with a lot of guilt of not being able to be there to help, to see my mom and my sister and Hannah and my niece and nephew more often. But what keeps me going on that front is my mom, when she does choose to speak to me on the phone, always reminds me, you need to take care of your kids first, and your family. And then I think of the fact that my parents left everything and everybody they knew behind to start over and only take care of their immediate family, being their three daughters, us sisters. So that's something that when I do feel guilty or sad, or I get off the phone and or I get a text, you know, from Hannah that, oh, like, I didn't know about this morning, but, you know, when I hear something like that, I wish I could be there to help. Another part of the guilt that I'm still really struggling with is I love these two women so much, and I wish that there was something more we could do, and I wish I could be a little more like, well, you know what, they're as comfortable as they can be, but it took a long time and many people telling me there is nothing you can do for your mom. We have taken her to the best doctors. We have had her on all these different kind of medications to get her out of her depression. But, you know, you can take the horse to water, but you can't make a horse drink. And if it is up in her will that this is how she wants to go, then I can only respect that and treasure the time that I have with her left and move on. But that guilt, I don't know if the word is necessarily guilt, but that, I think it is for me guilt, that why can't we, you know, snap her out of it? Why can't we help? There's something else, there's something I'm not doing. But it's not that, and that's taken me a long time to acknowledge and accept. I don't even know if I've accepted it yet, but I can acknowledge it.
But I know I've tried. I've tried so many times because I'm right there. And I'm not getting anywhere. And with Carla, thank God she's so cheerful. So, you know, we have a physical therapist coming in. We arranged for aqua therapy for her. So I know that really, I mean, there is nothing I can think of to do that we haven't done. And because I am in that industry, I know that there are no other options at this point in her care that can be explored. So I think that's why I feel a little less, I feel less guilty than Teresa. I mean, I'm keeping an eye on them and I make sure, you know, all their appointments are kept. And again, whenever I figure out something more that can be done, like this interview with you, for example, then we do it. And what more can you do than your best, right? It has to stop
at
some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you have learned from this experience. Sounds like a lot, but why don't you put it into words?
Well, I think what I find absolutely shocking is how, and I've known it for a long time because, again, you know, I've been in the healthcare industry for a very long time, but how very disjointed and incompetent it all is. And I case manage both Carla and my mom, meaning I try and coordinate everything that goes on with them, and it still goes absolutely wrong. I'll give you an example. When mom broke her hip and she was coming home from the skilled nursing facility, we needed a hospital bed for her and, you know, all her pain meds and, of course, everything to be at home before she arrived. I can't tell you, Dave, how many hours I spent on the phone with the skilled nursing facility, with case managers, with the durable medical equipment company, with the transportation company, trying to make sure that everything arrived before mom was delivered home. Mom was delivered home 4 hours before the bed arrived. She arrived home with someone else's prescription list and without her pain meds. So the driver left mom sitting on the commode. I had to move Carla out of her hospital bed, put her on the couch, put mom into the hospital bed, and I spent pretty much the rest of the afternoon chasing down the durable medical equipment company where is mom's hospital bed. It was absolute insanity, and I was thinking, what happens with people who don't know how it works, who don't know who to call, who cannot take the time off, you know, from work like I can, who are not flexible to spend the time on the phone yelling at people, right, who don't even know who to yell at, quite frankly, who don't speak English, who, you know, who don't have the means, and who don't have a supply of Norco and whatever meds mom needed at the time, because I was just poaching from Carla until the next day when I could get the written prescriptions to resupply mom. But I just thought, oh my God, this is absolutely crazy. This is crazy. And I spent all that effort to make sure it didn't happen. I don't know.
If you can't even do it, what hope do we have?
If I can't do it, who can? Right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that blows my mind is, so there is my 46-year-old sister who is really healthy, right? She collapses day to day. We didn't have long-term care for her because, you know, she was so young. And now without long-term care, it takes 2.5 years to qualify for Medicare, and her disability income is too high to qualify for Medi-Cal. So everything that that her insurance doesn't cover, which is, you know, all the physical therapy, certainly no caregiving, nothing. Everything that would get her better and everything that she truly needs is not covered by her insurance. She cannot qualify for those benefits through Medicare or Medi-Cal. I hired a lawyer to become her, for her to become my dependent, because she was declared legally incompetent. So no one will deal with me and no one will deal with her because she was declared legally incompetent by the doctors, and I have not become yet her guardian appointed by courts. I've been working on it for 6 months with the help of the lawyer. Everyone is dragging their feet. So I cannot, you know, I don't have official access to her bank accounts. I don't have official access to her disability. I mean, thank God people are kind and know that the system needs to be worked and, you know, everything worked out in the end. But officially, everything is really done under the table because I don't have the legal power to be doing any of it, because the power of attorney that was in place is not strong enough of a document to take care of someone who has been declared legally incompetent by a physician. It is absurd. And I know that all of this is in place to protect us, right? But it doesn't work the way it is supposed to. It's crazy. So the amount of time we are spending on it is phenomenal. Absolutely. And the bureaucracy is, just absurd, absolutely absurd.
That's one thing that you've learned from this experience and that you can share with others is get your power of attorney early while everyone is healthy so that you don't have this nightmare. Tell us about how people can contribute to Carla's treatment. I understand you started a website or something going on where people can actually contribute to help her get better. Is that right? Tell us about that.
Yes. We have a family friend who a couple of years ago unfortunately broke his neck and is completely paralyzed. And they were kind enough to give us this information. The organization is called Help Hope Live. And it is a fundraising organization. They'll help you fundraise, but they also have a link to where you can donate money for medical costs that aren't being covered by insurance. So, for example, the full-time caregiver that we have at Hannah's house or her water therapy. And you can go to the website. You can directly contribute money through the website. You can mail in a check to Help Hope Live in care of Carla Jepson. And we just started this partnership with them a couple of months ago, and moving forward, we will be doing additional fundraising. I am also a professional photographer, and I am doing family sessions this fall and donating 25% of the proceeds to Carla's fund. And then next year, we'll do other fun events to get people not only to, you know, donate and help our family, but to become aware of the risk factors. I was speaking with a lawyer a couple of weeks ago, and I'm actually volunteering tomorrow night to photograph her event. It's and they're calling it the Red Gala to increase knowledge about heart disease in women. And she didn't even know that that included aneurysms and stroke. She was just mainly thinking about heart attack because a woman in her family, I believe it was her mother-in-law, had a heart attack. And I said, well, heart disease isn't just a heart attack. I said, my sister had this aneurysm. And that's how she's like, oh, would you be willing to donate your time and photograph the event? And I said, absolutely, I would love to. So we're excited to be able to have somebody like Help Hope Live help us.
There is, you know, the Heart Organization, American Heart Organization, is a partner of ours that I work with, and I'm trying to get them involved as well because they are really good people.
That's a good idea.
And, of course, they are trying to get this message out there, especially for women. You know, women suffer from heart disease more than men, and
Right. They
have very different symptoms than men do. We don't get the chest pain. We don't get the tingling in the arms. So women really need to get familiar with what to expect. I listened to your podcast about your wife. You were talking about the headache she had before
Right.
the stroke. And I wish I knew that a severe headache could be a sign of the subdural hematoma of the bleeding of the brain, because Carla did complain of a headache the weekend prior, the Friday that she collapsed. I assumed it was a migraine because periodically all of us get them. But no, it was a more than likely when that subdural hematoma burst and started bleeding. And, you know, if I had been a little more cautious and rushed her to have her scanned, we might have prevented a lot of this. But I didn't know. It didn't even raise a red flag. I didn't think it was anything to worry about.
So what has all this done to your faith or your concept of God?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I don't really subscribe to organized religion of any kind. I have a big problem. We are Roman Catholic by background, and especially with the Roman Catholic Church. But I do believe in God, very much so. And I think that God was watching over us that night, especially over Carla. And I'm very thankful for that, absolutely.
So you're staying positive.
Yes,
you
have to
doing
stay
everything.
Positive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, you have to stay positive. You have to project that. You have to hope for the best. You have to hope that Carla improves. You know, you have to hope that mom will, that the best thing that needs to happen for mom will happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and that the kids will only be stronger for this because, I mean, we know from our personal experience, Teresa and I, that when you kind of go through fire, it does make you very, very strong. And, sure. You know, as she was saying, if we hear one more time how strong you are, yes, you are strong. But, you know, you don't have a choice. I mean, this is in front of you, and you have to plow through it because what's the point in crying in the closet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, will you be good to anyone? Will it do any good to anyone? No. So, you kind of have to pick it up and keep going.
Mm-hmm. You're very strong, Hannah.
I cry all the time. Yeah. I cry every day. At some point, I cry every day.
I can't remember when I last cried, honestly.
Yeah, well, Hannah is the rock of this family. And
sense and sensibility.
If I ever need a caregiver, I'm calling you, Hannah.
Listen, I can take care of you. Come on down.
No, you know,
to tell you a funny story, on top of all of this, last September, we picked up yet another big dog who was stumbling down our street, a hairless husky, right, with a thyroid dysfunction. And Sarah was so upset by seeing this poor bedraggled thing, I could not leave him out to starve on the street. So, you know, brought him home, put him back together, and I am happy to report that this poor thing is now has full hair. He just looks like someone really drunk gave him a haircut, and you know, gained a lot of weight, and he looks like he's the happiest husky, and certainly the luckiest one, you know, in Calabasas, that's for sure. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on in that household.
Well, you just can't help yourself. You're just a natural-born caregiver. And, you know, I know, I don't know if you'll admit this, but I know you do get a great deal of satisfaction out of it. Yeah, it has its hard moments, but it's also very rewarding. And I know a lot of people who communicate with me say, yeah, you know, and they explain their day, which was just hell, you know, and they say, but you know what, I wouldn't exchange it for anything. So,
right.
Tell us just really briefly, what is the good stuff that you're getting from being a caregiver? We've got about 3 more minutes, so, and then we'll finish up. And then give us the actual web address when you're done in 3 minutes of how they can get a hold of this site that where, you know, they can contribute.
I think for me is knowing that they are at home with people who love them, that they are taken care of immediately when they need anything, you know, that they are not someplace in a depressing place with strangers taking care of them when they finally get around to it. And I would not want that for me. I would not certainly want that for my mom and my sister. So that's really my main focus of all of this.
Yeah, well, that's so good. And Teresa, how do they get to this website?
The website is www.helphopelive.org. So .org, helphopelive.org. And you will see a box in the top right-hand corner, find a campaign. Just type in Carla Jepson. Carla is spelled with a K, K-A-R-L-A, and her last name is J-E-P-S-O-N. And you can donate there or send a check to Help Hope Live in the name of Carla Jepson. And I forgot to add that all of the donations are tax-deductible. So that's an important thing to know. And for me, what I have learned is, you know, why are we being put through this? I don't know why we have been put through all of this, but I have just learned how important my family is to me, and there is nothing and no one that is going to keep us apart, and that is a very wonderful feeling.
Yeah, that's great. And your kids are watching, you know, and I know this isn't easy for them, but We have children, and they will treat you, the parents, the way they see the parents treating their parents. So, you know, like you mentioned before, it's just so refreshing to hear you put such an importance on the family unit. And that's something, obviously, in America that has diluted to where, you know, there are family members who haven't spoken to each other in years, which is, you know, we've fallen a long way from where we first came to this country as immigrants. So thank you again. I can't believe this hour has gone so fast. And thank you for allowing me to interview you. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today. And every Wednesday, live at noon Pacific Standard Time and Pacific Daylight Time when we're on that. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts so that you can listen to the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. And they're also on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, under the Uplifting Interviews tab. And we're also on iTunes. So get there from my website's radio show tab. And just a reminder, when you're on my site, please don't forget to take that short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, to assess where you are in the burnout process. Get your free copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Our story of my wife's stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side for 20 years now. Hasn't been able to speak for 20 years. And I'll tell you, she makes us normal people just look like whiners and complainers. She's amazing and a very, very strong lady. You will love this story. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.